I will start by quoting somebody from Chiapas that you know very well, Marcos. And his very clear statement when he said to face the reality we're living through, it is one no and many yeses. Un no y muchos sís. And what he referred to is one no is no to capital, no to the model, no to the economic, extractive, exploitative, and extermination model that exists throughout. But he was very clear in saying that's not enough. Many yeses, the many colors that Oscar was referring to. Diversity. There is not a single answer to the global enemy, but there is a single global enemy that expresses itself with specificities and peculiarities in different contexts and realities. So if we either not see the common enemy and become concentrated in specific efforts, isolated from each other, I deal with feminist issues, but I don't care about class. I deal with gay rights or ecology or black peoples, but I don't care about class or global social justice, then we're blind, because we're not seeing the common enemy. But if we deal with the common enemy and we do not learn to respect diversity, if anyone here still believes that once communism or socialism arrives, women will have equality of rights, you tell me that you really seriously believe that, or that has to be a struggle as well. So autonomies have to be respected in order for there to be social justice. But we have a struggle in common against capital. And if we choose one or the other, we're choosing against ourselves and we're moving into suicide. It isn't one or the other, it is both. So at the start, I'd like to help myself from a quote by indigenous people from the NASA project in southern Colombia. And their statement for their struggle, which they repeat recurrently, and you go anywhere and any child will tell you this, they start by saying, words without action are meaningless. Actions without words are blind. But words and actions outside of the spirit of communities are deaf. So it's the belonging, the meaning, and the action. Somebody else, more recently than the indigenous people, because these ways of thinking have existed ancestrally before, somebody else that you might remember or mention but not know very much about, which is Marx, said the same in other words. In his statement, which was absolutely clear, was praxis, which was learning through action. But also the action is used, it's acting, not just by learning. Remember the famous phrase? Philosophers are around to understand the world, the deal is to change it. That came from him. So the problem we have now, and this is where I'd like to start seeing before the wishful thinking, is we do not start where we want to start, we start where we are, wherever we are. Where do we struggle from? Wherever we are. So this idea of I have to go somewhere else in order to join the real struggle, or only those who wear Zapatista t-shirts or Che Guevara t-shirts have joined the revolution, right away don't trust it. You know what the most sold item in the global market was during the 20th century? Any idea? The picture of Che Guevara. So there you go. Did he want to feed the market? Certainly not, but he did. So all of you have done very good for the market, and who knows how much you've done for Che Guevara. So as Oscar was saying, co-optation works, even with the symbols of revolution. So it's not enough to join the struggle of the Palestinians or the Zapatistas or the Colombians. In fact, it may not mean anything at all. So the first thing is, we do start where we are. The second point, and this is just to provoke you and see if we get into a little battle afterwards. We cannot wait till we're all equal to begin the struggle. It's the same as saying, you women wait till we have socialism and then you can talk. Right now, right here, today, where we are, we're doing both and all of the above, or we're doing nothing at all. And that is the struggle. And of course, militancy, that word that isn't supposed to be used anymore, is precisely about that. It's not just doing the job that needs to be done, it's understanding that doing the job that needs to be done involves imagining, creating, thinking. We are not to achieve a world where we will all live like cattle in equal conditions. We want to live. Therefore, we have to imagine the life that we would enjoy, and it is to construct that joy that diversity should exist and be respected. But also, a minimum of conditions of the generation of wealth that will allow us to live in our own ways with dignity, those conditions, a minimum of those, have to be established, and they will not be established as long as capital is in control of the world and extending the way it is. So once more, un no y muchos sí. So what is, I'll tell you honestly also to a third provocation, if the two previous ones didn't do it, I'll keep going this way. A third provocation.
Burn my Che Guevara t-shirts today.
You have 20, you need to burn a lot more. So the third provocation is, I heard recently that everybody in the anti-globalization movement is following in the footsteps of Seattle. Well, I'm not. The resistance did not start in Seattle. And the anti-globalization process did not start in Seattle. And it is not a North American movement. And it's been going on for a long time. And in this island, Abya-Yala, Turtle Island, for at least 500 years. So resistance didn't come from Seattle. Is that saying something wrong about Seattle? It's saying, no, don't buy Seattle like Che's t-shirt. There was a lot more about Che than his image. And that's what did it. So that's one point I'd like to make. Learning about resistance is a major effort. It isn't joining a club. In fact, it's much more standing in front of a mirror than it is joining others. Because then, when you join others and you haven't done the standing in front of the mirror, you will be the weak link of the knot you've formed. Because you don't really understand and believe. You have very good image, form is good, words are nice, but where are you? Where do you stand? How strong are you? Practice. Back and forth. From doing to reflecting, to doing, to creating. And that's the process proposed. Particularly, and I'm referring back to Oscar, when capital is using, combining like never before, three strategies. And somebody, I think it was Ignacio Ramonet at Le Monde Diplomatique, called those the axis of evil. And the three strategies it's using are, one, terror, systematic terror, war, included, but terror is one. It's the war machinery throughout. The second one that it's using, the second strategy it's using, is obvious. The economic machine, bringing everybody down to their knees, or else there won't be money. And that goes from the individual having work, having to exploit him or herself within a maquila model, and then having to say, thank you, that's the job I want. And government's going around, but our people are unemployed, and they want jobs. And we are providing them with jobs by providing them with foreign investment in offshore interests so that they can work as maquilas, and all women want to be maquilas. And that's the way they present. And the same, the whole of Argentina is a maquila. According to the IMF, the Argentinians want the structural adjustment even though they can't eat and they have no jobs, because if the Argentinian president doesn't say that, they won't get the IMF funding to continue to do the same. So the economic strategy is the second one that is being used. And the third one is the propaganda machine. It's not the media. It's not a communication. It's a propaganda machine, and it's everywhere. And those three things combine themselves, and never before we have reached, like now, we've reached conditions and situations where we actually gladly, happily, buy the propaganda, therefore feed the economic system, and actually reproduce the fear between one another to maintain the system going. So everybody goes around weaving for capital what capital just instructs from above, like a recipe, and it just reproduces itself to the bottom. I've stated these three strategies, which I'll address a little bit further, with one purpose in mind, and it is saying, let's question what we do in terms of resistance and solidarity efforts, in terms of evaluating how successful we are, measuring against how much of a dent we're able to make into these strategies the capital is doing. So let's look at Genoa or Seattle or any of the other activities we're doing, including these panels. How much are we preparing ourselves, and what are our actions doing to affect the economic propaganda and war machine that is actually advancing as it wants? How much of the agenda are we preparing ourselves, or how reactive are we to the agenda somebody is preparing for us? If the subject, I mean, if I can decide wherever you're going to be by deciding when the next G8 or FPAA meeting is going to be. So I can control you easier than I could before. So I know exactly where you'll be. Am I saying you shouldn't protest? Not at all. I'm saying we should know that, so that we don't only do, as Oscar was saying, what they know that we'll do, but other things that they cannot predict and that they're not prepared for. But another thing we have to acknowledge is the fact that capital is reactive. And there's an example in Montreal that is one of the most amazing ones there is, the invisible hand of capital. How does it work? Capital is a mindset. It's followed historically a process that begins with exploration. It's followed by exploitation. It continues on to exclusion and finally ends in extermination. And it combines all of the above. And look at any historical process and you can see it. Sometimes it goes directly from exploration to extermination if the local people get in the way. And in other times it combines all those efforts. So if you look at that as a process that capital uses, and then you look at the things Oscar was mentioning as the indoctrination, the domestication that we reproduce, actually we behave within the framework of capital because we don't recognize our daily efforts within the global context and how those two things work together. We work to reproduce the model, and we're not too aware that we're doing it. So if capital uses those three strategies, what is it using them for? Basically, what capital needs is to accumulate wealth. And the purpose of wealth accumulation through markets requires a process of extraction of resources. And the cheaper the resources, the more profit you will make. And in order to extract resources, capital needs to control territories where the resources are. Now, if I say territories, we all immediately think of a jungle somewhere. It's not, it's urban territories as well, it's space, but it's also the territory of the imaginary, the way the landscape of our minds work. If we have our minds set to work from 8 to 8 or 8 to 12 and Monday to Friday, weekends, if we have information for us is the computer and we don't create the landscape here, all we're doing is developing a mirror image of the outside landscape that has been created for us, and we reproduce it inside. So the liberation of territories and contested territories involves the liberation of the territory of our imaginaries as well. And that involves recognizing, for example, that what is going on in Palestine and in Africa and in India and in Colombia and with the maquilal models within North America are necessarily the same struggle. But we don't. In practice, we compete for visibility and resources. I should have been speaking here all the time about Colombia because it's more important than Mexico or Palestine and the other. And I want your money for solidarity for Colombia, not for Palestine. Give it to me. Don't we do that? We do it out of conviction and belief and because we have to support the people where we come from. But we also, by following what our feelings and our commitments are to a specific region and peoples, if we don't link the struggles, we're actually doing the favor of fragmenting them and dividing them. And we're as blind as they want us to be. So I will propose for discussion purposes that we can be, there are, it's a fact, the centuries have told us this, the century of the revolution, the last century, told us clearly that there are fascists in the right and in the left, as well as there are capitalists who call themselves socialists, and socialists who are really capitalists. So we have to play there. Am I saying there are no solid positions? No. What I'm saying is one cannot take a position for granted because one has a common speech. And the fact that one is fighting for one's people, which is where one belongs, doesn't mean that one is building the kind of global effort that we need to face a common enemy. At the same time, ignoring our own people, the diversity of the different projects, and postponing the imagination to establish different projects with autonomy is also ignoring the very possibility of future. And that involves those who are fighting against the existing model. If we only have one way to face the model that is imposing its power on us, then we won't have any alternatives to develop successful outcomes. I've said these things in order to point out, and I'll base it on examples that come from Colombia but are applicable elsewhere. Historically, Colombia has gone, the official history of Colombia is linked to the history of capital. And it is 500 and so years old. And it started with an initial period of conquest and colonization, which moved on in the establishment and consolidation of a nation state. And finally now, the most recent process is the neoliberal process of the so-called globalization. Three distinct periods, but they're all part of the same process, whose purpose is the four X's that I mentioned before. Exploitation for profit that flows to the north, and it always has. What has changed qualitatively and quantitatively has been, for example, the use and conception of territory. Not the same territory the Spanish wanted to control and they could control than the territory globalization is after today. The second is where the power is and who controls it. Where are the powerful? Who are the elites? And how they function? Or the economic processes themselves have changed throughout the different periods. So for example, if you look at the stage of colonization and conquest, what the Spanish came for was El Dorado. What they wanted was mostly gold, but not only gold. The elites were mostly in Spain, they were Spanish subjects in our case, and what they did was explored only to extract gold and the resources they needed for the Spanish homeland. Native people were not human beings, in fact they were not recognized as human beings until the National Constitution of 1991. Native people were not humans in Colombia till 91. And then, of course, the Afro-Colombians, the Africans that were brought for the exploitation process as well. So an initial period that was restricted to specific territories that were of easy access based on the technologies available for communication and so on, and the use and exploitation of those territories, and that's the beginning of the known history, of the history that we talk about. The second process, the second stage, is totally linked to global markets, but it's best explained by the dependency theory economics. It's the period where peasants who used to be self-sufficient and indigenous people who were mostly self-sufficient now have to begin to produce monoculture for global markets at the initial stage of this nation-state process. So they move, in our case, into coffee, cotton, sugarcane, etc., and everything is linked to global markets that decide the prices of these products. And then, of course, the agrochemicals come behind this, and none of this can be produced if we don't buy the chemicals from the outside. It's just an example of the first part of that period of the consolidation of the nation state. There is a state that is established, and it's a national state. And now there's a new actor, a national elite, which is absolutely linked and dependent to a global elite, where it moves its resources in order to survive. So it's a different structure, but it's the same purpose. Developed merchandise, produce merchandise at the cheapest possible way, put it in the market, and make the flow of capital go up north. And then now, the third process, and this is oversimplifying. But the third process, in the case of Colombia, is very clear. And it involves, and that is why Colombia is a good example to learn from in the region today. Colombia is the preamble of the FTAA. Colombia is the testing ground, together with other places. These things are going on in Argentina and Mexico and other places, but in Colombia, right now is the most aggressive model of annexation to the global model. What is going on in Colombia is capital needs to access territories cheaply, and there are people in those territories, and people who claim ancestral right to the territories where capital wants to extract resources. So they resist being removed, and two strategies are used to get them out of there. One is all kinds of legal or legalistic manipulations, and the other one is war, and dirty war. And that's why 2.5 million Colombians have been internally displaced by fear and war in the last 10 years. I just heard the statistics from Kosovo yesterday. 200,000 people were displaced a year from Kosovo. Now this is 2.5 million. Last year, 317,000 Colombians were forcibly displaced. Most people don't hear about this at all. And so there's a strategy of a dirty war and a war on drugs and a war on terrorism being used to displace people from resource-rich territories. And there's a second component, the second strategy. And it is the IMF-based strategy of structural adjustment to make productive processes cheaper. Now, can anyone tell me what, in the latter part of the 20th century, what was the largest export of the north to the south, in volume, in quantity, the one that has made them more profit than anything else? And that is the fastest mechanism to make resources flow towards the north and make the rest of the world absolutely dependent and live by, we exist to move capital from the south and other resources to the north. And that's the way they did it. They exported the capital. They had literally, not only capital, they literally had money. And money accumulated in excess, which was leading them to a crisis in the 70s and early 80s. So they started exporting money at a price. So they sold us money, which we're going to have to pay forever, with our lives, with our, so every child in the world, in the so-called third world, is born with a greater debt every day, which they will not get out of in all of their lives. And that was an export that we had in place from the outset. But the dirty war is necessary in the production process as well, not only in the extraction process, so that the margin of profit grows. And what makes production processes expensive or cheap? Manufacturing of goods and so on. What makes them cheap or expensive? And how can we make labor cheaper? Pardon? Going south, exploiting them, removing their benefits, destroying unions. Right? Making workers compete against workers. Is there another mechanism to make labor cheap? Anything you can think of?
Have a job done in prisons.
Well, that's another place, but it's the same strategy. Enslaved people, is there any other one? Those are the same, different forms of exploitation, I agree. Is there anything else?
To cut personnel?
How?
Just to remove the personnel. Technology.
Right, how do they call that?
Modernization.
They call it capital intensive processes. And capital intensive processes are processes whereby you remove, you replace people. So you can choose. You either do it, people tend to do things better, So they either do it in a Makila model, which is very cheap, or they're replaced by capital, and then capital intensive models are introduced. But you need, in order for these things to work, you need people to accept these processes constantly. In fact, you need to make these processes invisible. And one of the latest strategies used to do that, I mean, the propaganda machine is extraordinary. It works. We reproduce it all the time. Examples. The computers. We think we can use the computer for our own purposes. And maybe we can, sometimes we can. But if you use something globally under current conditions of distribution of power, who is going to use it more? The one who has more power to use it. But you end up buying the machine through which information is, the specific form of training and information is transmitted. But you also, time, the use of, and control of time is essential to this whole process. So you work, the number of hours you work a day, the exploitation of work, and all these things increase so that we all live in fear of losing. We're enslaved by our fear, and the fear is what has to be created. You either find a job or you're starved. The job we offer you is exploitation, and you can lose it against the other one who might do more than you, and then off you go. So what I'd like to do, to, after proposing these things and leaving some of these things on the table, is saying, in terms of proposals and ways ahead, one, the solidarity efforts must teach us to articulate between different realities and to see how the strategies are common to different places. We must develop at the same time three types of strategies. Strategies that will allow us to resist a global model. Strategies that will allow us to construct and propose alternatives, but also mechanisms to understand the aggression, where it's going and how it's working. And we have to be able to do those three things simultaneously from wherever we are. We need to also be linked to specific processes wherever we are, and territories, mental and otherwise. If we're not connected to specific processes, we'll move into the abstract world of the struggle against capital, which is nowhere. It has to be located somewhere with some people, with specific efforts, and we have to be able to measure the impact of what we do locally, collectively, and globally, and we have to learn to do it. And measure it how? Are we able to impact the mechanisms of aggression of capital on the one side? In other words, is the one no working? Can we affect the economic model by constructing alternatives? Can we affect the propaganda machine by constructing other ways of communication and other contents? And can we specifically overcome the terror of the aggression through war, dirty and otherwise, to develop a world in which we can survive? And this is filled with contradictions and problems. I'm going to pose a question in finishing that is, I think, an important one for us to work on as a challenge. And the question is this. If you hear the phrase, I believe in armed struggle, I believe in armed struggle, under the context we're discussing, just, I'm leaving it for you to think about. What is your reaction to that question in the existing context? The other way of posing this question is, what do you believe you need to achieve, and where is armed struggle within that? And these are the kinds of things we don't debate enough. So we can say things like, I believe in armed struggle and get it out of context, or I say I reject violence and get it out of context completely. And we say these things simplistically without discussing them. And then sometimes we turn murderers into heroes, and sometimes we turn heroes into murderers, and by doing that, we help the system. So that's one question, just as an example of the kinds of things we can and must address in under specific circumstances. So the proposal specifically is, we need to construct autonomies diverse autonomies from different places, but we also need to weave autonomies against a common enemy. Can we really respect the rights of others to be different? And can we join others to really and effectively destroy capital, which is what we need to do? And there are things within capital that are ours. So technology is not bad because capital has it. Well, the problem with capital is that in principle it is immoral and amoral. It is immoral because it is not interested in constructing well-being but profit. And it is amoral because it's part of its nature to hurt people. So means and ends, if the purpose is to accumulate and to grow, the end result will be what we have, destruction. Well, what other purposes can we come about around developing, and how do economic purposes like growth become part of those other processes? What are the ends and the means of the different projects we're looking to develop, and how can we work together to develop a world of colors which we're far from seeing? Thank you.